right? You simply ignore it. We must all choose whom we associate with, whom we talk with, whom we deal with, who talks to us, what people we even regularly see. You see too much sin around you day after day, and God help you. Third, permanent value, witnessing to Christ. Our Lord, as you remember, as described by St. Luke in the opening chapter of Acts, tells his followers to wait and pray for the coming of the Spirit. And then you will be my witnesses. Now the English word is simply witness. But the biblical word is not witness. It is what?
Martyr.
Martyr. There are two qualities that every witness has to have, but there's one more that a martyr has. So a witness-martyr put together has three qualities. What's the first? And this was built into the monastic tradition from the very beginning. If a person is going to be the martyros, of which Christ spoke, or in the Greek, martyroi, you will be my witnesses. That's the biblical term. First, there must be a deep understanding of who Christ is. One must be familiar with Christ. And this comes especially how? Through prayer, right? All right? So the first is, be familiar with Christ. Understand Christ. Secondly, this is a witness. In the nature of things, should anyone witness, using this as a verb now, should anyone witness to anything that he doesn't know, that would be what? Please? That would be perjury, right? In a court of law, if I testify that I've been a witness, see, and I don't know, I'm fabricating, that's a lie. Okay? And if I do it under oath, it's perjury. So the first condition for a witness is deep understanding knowledge. And you don't begin to witness unless you've got that. And this is the first condition of religious life. Or for that matter, the first purpose of all pursuit of holiness. Secondly, first I therefore must know this Jesus to whom I'm going to witness. And know him well. And other things being equal, the better I know him, the more effective witness I can be. Sometimes people tell me, for example, after a lecture, gee, it was good to hear you, Father. You sound like you know what you're talking about. Yeah, thanks. Appreciate it. So the first condition is knowledge, intimate knowledge of Jesus Christ. Secondly, to witness, it is not enough to merely know. That's interior. What must a witness do? Otherwise, there's no witnessing, no testifying. Mister?
What must a witness do?
Yes. Suppose somebody had witnessed, the verb, an accident. He is brought to the, quotes, witness stand. He is asked by, say, the prosecutor, would you tell the jury what you saw? And the person smiles, says nothing. Is that person a witness? What then must a witness do besides knowing?
Proclaim.
Proclaim.
And just as there can be no witnessing without prior knowledge, so there can be no witnessing without proclamation. And there are different ways of proclaiming.
Proclaim by word of mouth. Proclaim by writing. Proclaim by your actions. Proclaim by the way you dress. Right? But you do something externally that testifies to internal conviction. Right? Now, as we know, this is no
trivial distinction, that not everybody who has the faith proclaims it. That's a safe statement. Because to proclaim the truth in any age
is not easy. And today, it may be heroic. But thirdly, so far witness. But in order to qualify as a witness martyr, witness means martyr, but that's what Christ really meant, what must this witness further be ready to do? To? Suffer. Okay?
Suffer. Suffer for what? Suffer for the proclamation, which proclamation is the result of the position. Okay? So there are three elements to this matter of witnessing,
and the number of Benedictine monks, monks and nuns that are honored by the church is over 5,000, indicating that over the centuries they've done a good job of witnessing. But as far as permanent value goes, this applies to all of us. We are all first to know Christ, we are to proclaim him, and we are to be willing to pay for our proclamation. And one reason we don't have more prophets today is because people read about what happened to Isaiah and Jeremiah and John the Baptist. And the greatest of all prophets, Christ, they killed him. Nice to have a lot of members. If you can get them, God bless you. But be sure you get the right ones. Be sure they're properly trained. And if something you may have found later on that you didn't know at first, kindly, but firmly, ask the person to leave. And those who are already in communities, the importance of witnessing, because what happens is, if we don't proclaim that which we're supposed to be, there is what is called a counter-witness. A misbehaving religious does more damage than a misbehaving layperson. Agreed? And finally, the primacy of grace in the work of salvation. You might say, well, of course grace is primary. Yes, but not everything that we know is true are we as faithful in putting into practice. Whatever else the monastic tradition has done and continues doing for all walks of life, priests, religious, and the laity, is to emphasize the fact that while we must exert ourselves to work out our salvation, and we must exert ourselves to win souls to Christ in the apostolate, but the primary agent in our sanctification and the primary agent in the apostolate is not we, but God. And that's why, before I close, I would say the two qualities in a religious without which he will not only not do good but will do great harm are humility and the spirit of prayer. And those are not casually chosen, believe me. I just wish I could emblazon each somewhere on the skies, because I've seen good people. And of course I always ask the Lord to protect me from what I can so easily recognize in others. Pride is destructive. Pride is venomous. Pride will eat up 30, 40 years of the spiritual life. Just eat it up as though it wasn't there. Might just as well be a postulant of 24 hours. She can go golden jubilarian, but unless she's humble, forget it. Humility. And we are exposed to so many advantages. We learn so much. We exercise so much influence. People respect us. They deal with us in a way that, well, makes us feel good. Young man, I was not so young. I was 33 when I was ordained. That's not so young, but priests are ordained, you know, at 24, 25 sometimes. The moment he's ordained, he's placed on a pedestal. So humility. And secondly, the spirit of prayer. That doesn't mean, no less than in the monastic tradition, the monks were not always praying, you know, actually praying. Out on the field, whatever they were doing, in the place where they composed manuscripts, they couldn't always have God on their minds, otherwise they make big blotches on the manuscript. It's the spirit of prayer, the desire to pray every chance I get. That I didn't find in a book. It's real. At every chance I get, I want to pray. And then God does things. He does things in us, and he does things through us. And I've been a priest long enough to say, out of all proportion to the human agent. Point is, unless you're very humble and you pray constantly, and that word constantly really means it, you are not profiting from what Saint Benedict and the monastic tradition is meant to give all of us.
This concludes Father John Harden's lecture on the subject, The Rise and Growth of Western Monasticism.